Hello, my marketing and entrepreneur friends. Welcome back to another exciting episode of the Let's Talk Marketing podcast, where I, your host, Katya Allison, get to explore the latest trends, techniques, and strategies in the world of marketing. My guest today is Brett Townsend. He is the Senior Vice President of Strategy at Quester, with a successful career spanning both corporate and agency sides of consumer insights. Brett has worked with major brands like Pepsi, Walmart, and Lowe's, leading teams that have driven innovations and marketing campaigns worth tens of billions globally. In addition to that, not only that, he is passionate about education. He serves as an adjunct professor and guest speaker at 15 universities. And during this episode, we get into the role and the value of community and brand building with a ton, I know, super technical, of insights on how understanding consumer behavior and narratives can really shape effective marketing strategies. We also talk about the significance of brand storytelling, common pitfalls brands encounter, and the importance of data, and my favorite word, authenticity, in crafting compelling brand stories. His unique perspective really emphasizes that at the heart of effective marketing is a deep understanding of the community that you serve as a brand. Brands can connect on an emotional level by really recognizing conflicts and challenges their consumers face, and then take those insights to foster authentic relationships. So get ready to listen to not just the why, but the how you can build a powerful brand through community and consumer understanding. So grab your favorite beverage, sit back, and let's dive into it. Let's talk marketing. Brett, welcome to the Let's Talk Marketing podcast. Very excited to have you on here. We are going to be talking about building brands via community today. So welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Katya. I'm also excited to be here. Thank you.
Well, let's get to it. I always like for my audience to get to know our guests. So I start off with the basic questions. What was your first marketing role? Whether it had marketing in the title or it did not, what would you consider your first marketing role?
Probably my first true marketing role was when I was doing consumer insights and some marketing for a publishing company. And so that's probably what I would say was my first role where I was actually doing marketing. And nice. Then kind of use that to go into the agency side and really start to work with clients and develop that before I then started on a 15-year corporate career, which had marketing and consumer insights combined in it.
I love that you started in consumer insights because I think as marketers, that's our foundation. We are marketing to the people, and having a really good understanding of what your audience or who your audience is, I think is so key beyond, you know, filling out a persona document or template. Now that's where you started. Where are you at now? What is your current role?
So my current role is I'm a senior vice president of strategy for an agency called Quester, and we are a branding and innovation strategy firm. And so we work with a lot of different companies on those two main things, but we also do a lot of things talking about jobs to be done work, really understanding consumer strategy, and then how does it all tie in specifically to brand and innovation.
Ooh, I love that. Tell me what you love about what you do. And remember, I'm going to ask you what we would pluck out because with the good comes the bad. But let's start with the positive. What is it that you love about what you currently do?
Yeah, it's funny. I always tell young up and coming professionals, you are never going to love every day of your job.
Nope.
They love some parts of your job, but there are going to be days and there are going to be tasks that you just hate and you're not going to like it. So, but what I would say I love most about my job is that I get to study humans. Mm. And human beings are endlessly fascinating to me. They always have been. And we are always evolving. We are always changing. Consumer insights and marketing truths, I always say, should be written in pencil, because while they're true at the moment, it will change for sure. And so just being able to study how humans think and how and the emotions and everything going into consumer behavior just absolutely fascinates me. And I never get tired of it.
You know, especially because you started
with consumer insights, I would imagine over the course of your career and like the trajectory of what digital has done for people has been a fascinating kind of just, man, if it's probably like you're watching it on TV, right? Like it is an entire, like, wow, who would have ever thought where you started to where consumers are now and how they consume content?
It's true, but at our core, we are the same as we've always been for thousands of years. You know, we are, as humans, we are driven by the same forces. You know, we are driven by the need to survive, by self-interest. Yeah. We are emotional creatures. Every decision we make is emotionally driven. And these things have always been the case. And so it's really fascinating, especially working with a food company for so long. I was at PepsiCo for almost a decade. And we talked a lot about the evolutionary psychology of how our bodies have developed and how it causes us to even crave certain foods. And so it's just those types of things are so fascinating to me.
We could have just done the podcast on consumer insights. So maybe I'll have you back on so that we can dive into that, because I think it's true. Like I think of obviously Maslow's hierarchy, and it's interesting because I interviewed someone about she called it like the demise of bro marketing, how we're always pushing people right for like the kind of clickbaity, clickbait to act fast, but it is such an emotional driver, right? It's the scarcity. It's the feeling that we want to kind of get out of people is, you know, that fear of missing out, right? Like the FOMO, click on here, do this. And I think that we're trying to balance that out of like, all right, how can we be ethical and empathetic with, you know, still speaking to just kind of emotions and getting people to actually stop and consume what it is that you're trying to say.
So. And I would add, I love emotional and empathetic is a huge key, but I would also add authentic. And that's one of the issues with marketing is that so many brands just try to be funny or do the clickbait or to just try to get people's attention, that they do it in a very inorganic, inauthentic way. And the authenticity is so important. And that's what consumers and humans respond to. And that's how they create those emotional relationships with brands.
Authenticity is a word that I use so much that sometimes I'm like, okay, guys, I know I'm saying it again, but it is so very true. And I do think like nowadays that is one of the biggest challenges for brands, not just marketers, but for brands is to be authentic, because it's so noisy out there and you kind of want to do the trend because you think that you need to do that to be relevant. And this idea of authenticity is like, I want to be unique, but I don't know how to be myself, because we also have to balance out like this fear of cancel culture as well too. Like, where's my spectrum? Oh my gosh, I could totally talk about this for days.
Oh yeah.
And we haven't even gotten to what you would take out. Well, tell me what we would pluck out of your role to make it perfect. Everything else besides consumer insights.
Yeah. You know, I think what I've learned, I started my career, you know, the bulk of my career, I started on the agency side, and now I am back on the agency side after being in corporate for 15 years. And I think what I would pluck out of my role now is there's always the roller coaster of emotion with getting or losing a project.
Yeah. With,
you know, and that I had forgotten about that roller coaster being on the client side.
Oh, that's so the truth. That takes me back as well, too. You do so much work to just try to get it, and then you don't get it.
Yeah.
But, feel like, if you're doing it right too, you become, because I remember this is exactly how I would get so invested. Like I could see the plan in action that we were putting down. Like, oh my gosh, I've got 12,000 ideas. This is how we're going to make it work. This is how we're going to track it. And then month over month, like this is what we'll be able to see, just to be like, we went in a different direction. So,
and then what hurts even more is when they tell you the direction they went and you just go, that's not going to help you.
Based on everything that you've told me, That's just not going to be it. Oh my God. That's so funny. That's a good one to pluck out. Now we've talked about all of that. I would assume, not assume, everybody has to be able to stay up to date with the trends, especially as a marketer, so that you can be strategic with everything that you're doing. So how are you staying up to date with the trends? Is there a podcast? Are there books? Is it research? Or is it people you follow? Is it social media? How do you stay up to date on marketing?
You know, it's really all of the above. I do all of those things, but there has been one thing in particular that we do particularly well at Quester, and no, this is not a shameless plug, but it is a way that we can see the trends even before they're happening, and that's through social narratives. So cyberspace is this really untapped, it's the world's largest untapped, unmoderated, unfiltered focus group, where there are constant conversations happening, and not like on Twitter, you know, X or Instagram or Facebook, but we're talking long form discussion forums and blogs and groups where people are talking about real issues and topics and brands and products and different things like that. And in those places, you can actually find trends before they develop. Because one of the things about trends is by the time something becomes a trend, brands are trying to grasp at the vapor of a trend. And that's where a community has kind of left that vapor behind as it's already moved on to the next thing. And so the key is to find those things before they become trends, because once they really become trends, you're too late. Yeah. And so it's finding those things earlier. And so we use that, and I dive into those quite a bit to just see what are the narratives people are talking about? What are things that they're concerned with when they're talking about a particular brand or a product or, you know, politics even or whatever? What is it that's driving their behavior and their beliefs? And when we can capture that, then we can help then clients and brands and whatever can develop solutions based on these types of trends that people are talking about before they become huge.
How are you guys aggregating that information? Like, so what are you scraping?
Yeah. So we have, it's through AI obviously, but there's a big human element to it too. So we have an AI scraping tool that can go in, and we can go back a year, 2 years, however long we want, and scrape. We can type in parameters and things, but it scrapes all of these, you know, thousands, millions of conversations about things. Then we have a back-end AI that analyzes that to a certain extent, but then it's our human linguists and people that can really come in and say, these are the stories. These are the narratives that are driving it. So it's not collecting analytics. It's not just saying these are key topics, but we really put the narratives behind it and saying, these are the stories that are driving thoughts and behavior.
That's amazing. I think, you know, at a very small level, I've talked about this in on other podcasts when we talk about social media and influencer marketing and all of that stuff. We do talk about the posts and we talk about that engagement, but it's taking a look at the comments, what's in the comment section that's actually going to tell you like how that message is resonating with your audience, even just seeing that there are comments, and then on top of it, doing that qualitative. The fact that you guys can do that at such a bigger level is insane. I'm assuming that there's a cost associated, or do you have a newsletter that goes out?
We don't do a newsletter. It's usually something that we do as part of projects that we do for our clients, kind of more of like a starting point. So when they say, here's the question we're trying to answer, a problem we're trying to solve, in many cases, that's the first place we go to say, okay, what are people talking about? And what's the general sentiment about this topic or this brand or something before we even get started? And it helps make us smarter, because then what we can do is understand the consumer language that people are using around these things. It helps us ask better questions because we have a foundation rather than just guessing about where to start. We know where to start because we have that. And like I said, we use it to uncover all sorts of different things. And I mean, in all of the years that I've been doing marketing, this is one of the coolest things that I've ever come across. And I used it when I was on the corporate side, and it was so valuable to uncovering those little bits of things that maybe it's under the radar and people really haven't heard of it yet. And of course, that makes it hard to sell it in because, you know, unless somebody's heard of it, they don't think it exists, which is not true. And so it's really kind of having these compelling arguments. And a lot of times we can go in and say, well, this is a result of 250,000 conversations about this. And it's kind of hard to argue with that when you have that kind of volume of data where people are talking about certain things and then forming these narratives around it.
I'm totally sold now. I have no need for the service, but because it's true, I think oftentimes we resort to doing something manually to try and to even get, you said something in regards to get the language that they're using, right? I always feel like we can all be at a table, even the most empathetic marketers, we can sit at a table and try to really put ourselves in the seat, but ultimately we're going to use our language if we don't have truly that common pain point with our audience. And there's nothing like hearing it from that consumer's mouth of this is how I would articulate this particular pain point, and I will say it in a totally different way. And then all of a sudden, your marketing message really hits the nail on the head when it comes to it.
And it kind of goes back to our theme of empathy, really understanding what is forming those things. Because, in consumer insights, you can measure what someone believes or how they're behaving, but we don't understand what are the narratives that are driving those beliefs and that behavior. And that's the key, because that's the motivation behind everything that they do. And so not only does it help us understand that, but then the other tricky thing about the narratives are, is that sometimes people want to discredit them or try to say, well, that's not true. That's not true. That's an outright lie. Or that happened 20 years ago. That's not true. And we have to explain to people a lot of times, it doesn't matter if it's true or false. That's not our job. Our job is to uncover how people think and what they believe and what is driving that belief. And then you develop the empathy so you can create solutions for that, not criticize them for their narratives or what they believe, because that doesn't get you anywhere.
Have you ever read the book Value Graphics by David Allison?
I have not.
Oh my gosh. I'm going to send you the link after this because I think that you would find it really fascinating. It takes it to a completely different level. And really, he analyzes, there's all of these subgroups of, it's not just the persona and we're trying to truly understand what their value set is so that we understand how they are emotionally reacting to it. And a percentage of people, there's a majority that fall into maybe one or two of them, but super fascinating. But on to the subject that we came to talk about, which was community and just kind of building brands through community. Before we do get started, I had told you this before we started recording. I want to make sure that our listeners are on the same page about what we mean when we talk about community. So I'd love to hear your definition of community that we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah, and I will preface it by saying that my definition of community has evolved over the last probably 5 to 6 years as I've learned more about, again, what really drives people to do things or whatever. So here's what I'm going to say is that when you meet someone, if you and I had met for the first time and we were talking about ourselves and getting to know each other, you wouldn't say, well, I'm a female, this age range, I make this much money, that kind of thing, the way that we typically classify community.
Yes.
So you can look online for this if you haven't seen it. It's a very funny graphic where it compares Ozzy Osbourne with King Charles III. They're the exact same demographic. Everything almost lines up perfectly with how they're both white men in their 70s, all these other things, but yet they couldn't be any more different.
Yes.
So my definition of, what we would do then is we would talk about our interests. We would talk about things that we enjoy doing, and we seek out communities of people who believe the same things and who enjoy the same things we do. So for instance, I live in North Carolina, so I belong to unofficially, I belong to an outdoors community because we do a lot of hiking and a lot of biking and kayaking here in the North Carolina mountains. I'm a huge Texas Longhorns fan, so I'm part of a Texas Longhorns community. I coached junior Olympic volleyball, played in high school, college, and still play now. And so I'm part of a volleyball community. So that's an example of communities that I belong to that shape the way I live my life. And so now I think the next level of how we define communities for marketers is you're looking for these communities of people, and there's hundreds of thousands or millions of these types of communities, and people belong to multiple communities, but it's finding these communities that resonate with you, that already have an affinity for your brand, and that you already have a connection with. And that's step one. Step two is then figuring out how can you contribute to that community? And what can you contribute to them instead of just taking from them their money as a consumer? And then that just continues this cycle of emotional connection to your brand. So when I use the term community, I mean this community of consumers who have like-minded interests or things that are affiliated with your brand that you talk to and connect with on a very intimate and emotional level.
So I define community in the exact same way too. And the reason that I also wanted to, you know, start with that is because I think that sometimes brands think of their community, right? Like, you know, I'm brand A and I'm talking about my community where the like-minded maybe, this is where I think that they're thinking wrong, but the thing that they have in common that is bringing them together is that they're all my customers. That could be one of the communities, right? Like, that's kind of a bit of a community, but what you're talking about is as a brand, as brand A, I actually want to look out for interest communities, right? That kind of share sort of those same values. Is that accurate?
Yes, because consumers affiliate themselves with brands that share and reflect their values. You know, it's like we buy brands because it says something about who we are. And if you're in a grocery store and you've got products in your cart and you have a friend that you bump into in the grocery store and they're going to look at your cart, what are they going to think about you based on what's in the cart? You know, because of the brands that you've bought and just like what we wear and what we drive and all these different things, it says something about who we are. And we take those choices as consumers very seriously in most cases. And brands, I feel, have been lagging behind in understanding that consumers really connect with brands that share and reflect their values.
Do you think that that's the only pitfall that brands make as it pertains to community? What are a couple of other ones that like I should be looking out for as a brand who is listening?
Well, I would say there's a lot of brands who don't tell great stories. You know, like I wrote an article about what's happening with Starbucks right now. Mm-hmm. And with QSR in general, like you can't read an article about a casual restaurant or a quick serve restaurant that isn't having financial issues right now. And I think the issue is that they're spending so much time telling me how cheap their food is that they're not telling me a real story that's compelling to get me to go. And so I think a lot of brands resort to the lowest common denominator and things that are easily replicable by competitors, that they've lost the art of brand storytelling. And so I think that is very egregious in my mind, how just turn on the TV and watch for an hour and see how many commercials are just talking at you about what they do or how they do it. And they're not giving you any reason why you need it other than, hey, it's cheap, you know, it's a powerful engine. Okay. Well, there's a lot of powerful engines and there's a lot of cheap food out there and things like that. It's like, I need the story. And then I think the other pitfall that they're getting into is that brands are trying to tell stories, as we talked about earlier, in a very inauthentic way. You have executives who are trying to push agendas that are their own that shows they're completely out of touch with their consumer base, and they're not telling stories that resonate with their consumers, but it's what resonates, as you said, in the boardroom. And that disconnect can really tank a brand and cause it to really suffer short term. And in some cases, what we're seeing now is long term decline in sales because they've just kind of lose their way.
You can't give me the entire playbook, so I'm going to pick one.
Okay.
I'm going to pick the brand storytelling because I think that's a really great example and definitely a hill that I will die on because the amount of companies that I've worked with that are so, I mean, whether it's a product or a service, you turn, if it's a product, it's the feature wars. It's this comparison. That's all people care about. When in reality, you're solving something for people with that particular product. So what kind of advice can you give someone on like how to be a good brand storyteller? Because I think like there's this panic of, but I've got to make the sale. I've got to make the sale. And they're going to ask me these questions anyway. So I'm just going to, I'm going to skip to that part.
Yeah. You know, and I think it starts with how are you building your story in the first place? A lot of people are like, we need to appeal to the largest audience possible because that's going to give us our greatest source, our greatest chance of making revenue. And that is not true. I mean, the best brands are highly targeted as to their stories and who they're going after. And so the philosophy that we share, you know, at Questor and what we consult people on is to build your brand story the way that your brand lover sees you. Because when they start to tell you that story, then that's how everybody else is going to see you. You know, it's like you and I just met. So I could ask other friends of yours or whatever, your mom, you know, you said lives with her. I could ask her about you. But if I really want to learn who you are, I'm going to go to your partner, your brand lover. You know,
I can't wait to hear what he says.
You know, those are the people that know everything about us and they're still with us, you know?
Yes.
They know the good and the bad and they love us through it all. And brands have that exact same relationship with consumers, is that there are consumers who love your brand so much that they know all of your faults and they don't care. They are your advocates. They are your biggest cheerleaders. And the story that they tell about you is different than what everybody else does. And so you're not marketing to only that small group of people, but that's how you build your story. And that's the story you tell. And then everybody starts to see you that way. And so I think that's the first thing that people get wrong, is they just try to come up with some story that will appeal to the masses. And it won't always appeal to the masses. Yeah. That's okay. But then the other thing I feel like people aren't hitting on in their marketing stories is they don't understand the consumer conflict. You know, like any great story is driven by conflict. I mean, think about TV shows, books, movies. Yeah. The most compelling part of the best stories are the conflict. Yeah. And, you know, Darth Vader and, you know, all the long films and just, you know, you name it, it's conflict. And if we don't understand the conflict that our core consumer is facing, we don't have a story to tell because we're not giving anybody the why on why they need our brand, because in essence, we're not helping them overcome anything. And so we have to be this tool of the hero or the heroine of the story to overcome the conflict. And if we don't understand what the conflict is, then we have no compelling reason to exist.
Oh, that's so true. I just love everything that you're saying, and I don't even need to wrap it up because it is, I can't even tell you how many times I go into a brand, and especially, you know, when I was at an agency, and this is why this was my follow-up question, because I assume that you are articulating how you are going to be able to build a strategy for a brand that you don't live and breathe every single day, right? Because I think that that's kind of the apprehension of people engaging with agencies. It has been in my past, even though I came from agency, I'm like, you're not going to be able to pivot as quickly. You don't know who I am. And sometimes potentially, maybe you've never worked in the industry that my company works for. Do you think it's enough to be able to speak to the customers to get as much information and really feel like you can put out the best marketing message that way?
Absolutely. And we work with clients that have a lot of great consumer insight, but just need help understanding how to build their story. And then we work with clients that really don't understand where their consumer is at all. And we do that work for them and then build it into this storytelling thing that we do for them and teaching them how to do it themselves. You know, we always tell people we can come up with a story for you. We'd rather teach you and train you how to do it yourself. And so we do it both ways. And it doesn't matter if I've never worked in a particular industry before, I know how to build stories. And I'm not going to try to tell you I know more about your consumer than you do, but I am going to take the elements that you know and kind of show you how to take all of these things that you think are hodgepodge bits of consumer insights and turn it into one cohesive story that shows empathy, connects emotionally, and then eventually builds your brand to the case where you, to the point where you have price inelasticity, where you have loyalty and that brand equity that allows you to do things with your brands that weaker brands can't do.
Now, I'm glad that you said that you like to teach it to other people as well too. So if I'm listening and I kind of want to test out like what my customer, what did you call it? A customer lover? Probably not.
Brand lover.
Yeah, that sounded wrong. And this turned into a different podcast. Yes. If I wanted to ask my brand lover, I'm assuming, because I always feel like if I ask them a question that is almost too high level, it's really hard to hone in on that. So I'm assuming I'm not going to ask that brand lover, hey, tell me what you love about me or tell me who you think I am. Are there a series of just kind of key questions or how do you guide people to get that story out of your brand lover?
We get them to tell stories because their stories are what are ingrained in their minds that help them do this. So I'll give you an example. I was doing some work when I was at PepsiCo in this particular space, and I was doing the work for Walmart. So this happens quite a bit where large retailers lean on their brands who sell within their stores to help do joint research to help them understand, because you know Walmart can't be an expert on every single category in their stores. And so they lean on us to do that. It's very typical. So I was doing some brand lover work for Walmart to kind of show them how we could partner with them. And so what we did was to uncover what is it that people love about Walmart? And we just asked them a series of questions, which basically got them to tell us stories about how this relationship started, how it developed, and how it turned into something that is so emotionally strong that it can never be broken. And I'm telling you, there were times where I was literally brought to tears by women telling us about how Walmart helped them through their divorce, being able to provide the essentials for their children while they were paying lawyers and fighting with their spouses. People who talked about how they were unemployed and Walmart was there for them. And just all of these kinds of stories that are so emotionally deep that they don't care about a lot of the other things, because Walmart had done some other research where they had been learning about, well, the stores are kind of dirty. I have to park way out in, you know, Egypt in order to go into the store. I have to walk through this huge store just to go back and get milk. And the thing is that these people agreed with all of that, but they're like, I don't care because my connection with Walmart has nothing to do with any of that. It's because they were there for me and I will never, like nobody else has ever been. They were almost talking about Walmart as if it was a person. Yeah. And that was one of the principles that we talk about is all brand relationships are human relationships. And we form relationships, not just with people, but with brands or fictional characters or, you know, celebrities that we don't even know. You know, like Earl Jones just passed yesterday. And so many people were just so sad about James Earl Jones because of what he meant to them. But yet none of them had ever met him. Yeah. You know? But it's this connection that we had made. And so that's really what it comes down to in understanding is that people will tell you stories all day. If you try to ask them questions, like you said, they can't answer it like they can through stories.
Yeah. And that's exactly why I asked the question. And but obviously I'm a podcast host, so I obviously like asking questions and I'm naturally inquisitive. And I think, and I do a ton of case studies as well. And I never really like to have them fill out a form, because if they fill out a form, they will answer the question. I'm in it for every conversation that happens in between those questions. So I inevitably am always asking for, let's record. I need 30 minutes of your time. 30 minutes is it. And I tell you, it always goes over. It always goes over like to an hour, if not more. Because once you do, I mean, to your point, once you do get people going, they have another anecdote. They have another one. And they've actually answered above and beyond the questions that are on there, right? I'm always really curious to see, like, what is the question that sparks that rabbit hole that gets us to like the real good stuff in between there. And I also love what you said too, because you were talking about, in my head, I was interpreting it as stickiness, because I always talk about creating like that stickiness, and that is equal to that brand loyalty. That's why, you know, that the people that you interview don't care about how far they park. That is still the reality. But like, to my core, I will go to Walmart because X, Y, Z. And it is amazing the value of loyalty still to this day. I think sometimes, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, but I think sometimes nowadays, it's like brands think that there's no such thing as brand loyalty, because we're such fast consumers and everything's really short and quick, and we're looking for like the biggest savings in getting the most out of it. But I'm curious, what are your thoughts on that?
Oh, there is absolutely brand loyalty. There is no doubt in my mind. Again, because it's more than just transactional, you know, so the type of consumer you're talking about is more like just a user, just a transactional type of consumer that is really only in it for certain things, but there's no relationship there. And a lot of times brands are chasing that type of consumer to meet a quarterly goal. And they're just like, ooh, we're going to miss this quarterly financial goal. Let's throw a deal out there or a LTO product to raise our profits. But that's not long-term building of the brand. That's just trying to meet a short-term objective using a customer who may not even really care about you. And so how do you build through that? Like another real quick example is when I was at PepsiCo, I realized that a lot of the research that we were doing in the soda category, we were talking to Coke lovers, because the typical screening questions in consumer insights are, you know, are you aware of the category? Are you a user of the category? And are you aware of brands in the category? Well, yeah. And so people knew Pepsi and Mountain Dew and things like that, but they were Coke drinkers and they're not invested in Pepsi. They don't care about us or our success or anything. So we started doing research with only Pepsi drinkers, only people who had an affinity for our brand. And it was amazing to see the differences in the data and the stories and therefore the direction that we ended up taking, because again, that community that you started talking about, we started focusing on the right people and the right community and giving us things that were very meaningful to help us develop marketing and innovation and things, and not just kind of going for whoever and anyone from any walk of life.
So it's funny because I was having a conversation today about not consumer insights, but it was a little bit about, taking a look at the data that we have in our CRM to at the very least give us some sort of guidance. And I was telling to the person that I was talking to, I'm like, you have to think of the information that you're giving me. You are my compass. I'm just looking for the direction, because right now we're rowing in many different directions based on everybody's perspective, what I call the anecdotal data. The anecdotal data it drives me nuts because I'm like, nobody knows that no one sees land. We're in the middle of the ocean. Let's use a compass. And to me, data is the compass. And to me, the way that you've described consumer insights and just kind of laid it out is that it is your compass to get into the right, not just headed into the right direction, get to your destination faster, right?
Faster in the most efficient way possible that is best for everyone. And you're right. And data comes in many different forms. And I think we have to beware of just because companies have more data than they know what to do with. And we have to beware of just numbers, because there is no emotion or empathy in data. as far as, you know, charts and graphs and numbers and, you know, POS data and things like that. We have to combine good data and analytics with a great consumer empathy and understanding. And you get that through these deep level conversations that you have and this deep understanding, which is also data, but not in the traditional form that people generally think.
Absolutely. I could talk to you all day about this. I don't even know if we hit the questions that I had sent you beforehand. I'm just going to assume that we did. I've had a good conversation. I do have one final question for you. And that is, if you knew then what you know now, what is the marketing or non-marketing advice that you give to yourself?
What I would probably say is I would say is have a plan. And it doesn't really matter what you're doing, but have a plan. So it was interesting because I got my undergrad in TV and radio broadcasting, and I did sports broadcasting for a number of years. And then I kind of decided, I don't really think I want to do this the rest of my life. And I didn't have a plan. And so I was very lucky to, through networking and some things, to land a job that kind of led to the next job in at the publishing company I mentioned, which then led to the next job, which then led to my career. And I talk with a lot of students when I teach about who have this very same question, and I tell them the same thing. I would just go back and tell my old self, just like I tell them, have a plan. It doesn't matter what you're studying, what you're interested in, have a plan on how you're going to use it and monetize it. Because, you know, I think kids get a lot of bad advice where they say, oh, do something you love and you'll never work a day in your life. And it's like, well, but you got to do something that you enjoy and that somebody's willing to pay you to do. And I think that was kind of my issue. So that's what I would say, is I would tell myself, just have a better plan. Now, I was very fortunate that my career has turned out the way that it was. But that's my number one advice.
Well, I think that you banked on yourself and you made a good bet. So that was a good plan, whether you thought it was or not. Yeah. I cannot thank you enough for coming on here. I've thoroughly enjoyed the conversation and I've gotten a ton of knowledge bombs from everything that you've shared today. So thank you.
Well, and thank you for having me, Katya. Really, it was a fun conversation. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
What a great conversation with Brett. I'm ready to dive into my key takeaways for you today too. So my first key takeaway is customer insights for the win for effective marketing. We talked about this a lot. As our conversation really unfolded, it was really clear the value of customer insights to marketers, right? The stories that motivate consumer behavior. We have to pay attention to consumer emotions, that's feelings, my friends, and how they evolve along with their motivations so we can really craft those compelling narratives. Without grasping their conflicts and their challenges and values that really resonate with them, brands can't effectively communicate their purpose. By really identifying and engaging with communities that align with your brand, you're really offering more than just products or services. You're providing these meaningful connections that is what drives loyalty. This is at like the core of being authentic, speaking from a place where you just get it and the customer feels seen. Think about just kind of, and this is going to be such a silly analogy, but it's literally what came to mind, was think about being obviously in like a dark movie theater after drinking too much of that huge icy that you thought was a good idea, right? Inevitably, you're going to have to go to the restroom. So it's dark and again, you've got to use the restroom. Sure, there's a sign that's going to tell you where the restroom is. That's a brand selling me something, right? But the lights along the walkway so I don't trip on my way out, that is a brand that understands that I've got to go through, or what I have to go through before I even get to that sign, right? So show people that you get it. Bottom line, you got to get it and see your customers to truly be effective. Not sure if that analogy hits the nail on the head, but it was really what came to mind first. Okay, key takeaway number two. Data helps you connect with your community, but it's not everything. I know, right? So data is critical. I am a data dork. Anybody who knows me knows that I say this all the time. But it doesn't stand alone. It needs to be paired with genuine empathy for your customers, your consumers. Figuring out what narratives really resonate with the audience and understanding their, again, emotional drivers, brands can really create those compelling stories that speak to their core community. Relying solely on anecdotal data, which is, I feel like, oof, I hate that, or broad demographic data, right? You're a tall white man in your mid-40s can really lead to ineffective marketing. Can you imagine if someone thought that's all that you were about? When it comes to leveraging data in marketing, think of it as a compass guiding you through just kind of a dense forest. You can see the general direction you go, but the real journey is in understanding the terrain, the ground, right? A great example in action would be skincare. Think of a skincare brand that dives into customer feedback and data analysis by focusing on where their loyal customers are. And what they love about their products, rather than just, you know, you're a single white female or a middle-aged Latina, they can tailor their message and product offerings by really digging into it. So it's not just the number of people who answered the survey, it's what they said about it. Now, this not only enhances a brand story, but it also builds a community that feels value, feels understood, and ultimately, again, drives loyalty. This whole, and this is going to be just kind of the theme, obviously, over my key takeaways, is the emotion, it's the narrative, it's meeting people where they're at. My final key takeaway, there is some love that's associated with this, but my final key takeaway is call me brand lover. Building, I know, it's a little... I laughed so much inside when I had written that out. And now that I say it, I feel a little silly, but it's true. Call me a brand lover. Building a brand story should focus on that, brand lovers, the customers who resonate most with your brand. Understanding their emotions, motivations, and experiences is really key for creating that narrative that feels relatable. So brands should avoid generic stories instead they should embrace unique narratives that really reflect their identity. Now, those are two things that are most important, but they aren't everything. Again, to create that story, that brand narrative that you want to, you also need to lead with empathy. You need to use consumer insights as the foundation. Get stories and language from your passionate advocates. Remember that skin brand. Number four, recognize the challenges that your consumers are facing for creating a compelling brand why. And lastly, be open to evolving your brand story. You know, there are trends, insights change, so you're going to have to evolve. It's organic. Your values are the things that stay the same. But that story, you're continuously building on that because you know what? Your consumers are continuously growing. The storytelling approach really helps build these deeper connections with consumers and it makes them feel valued and really understood. Now, what did you take away from this episode? I want to hear it. Post it on the Let's Talk Marketing LinkedIn page, on YouTube channel. Leave it in an Apple review. We want to get those reviews out, my friends, or slide into my LinkedIn DMs. Let's keep this conversation going. A very special thank you to my podcast editor, I'm Johnny Ike, and thanks to you for spending your time with me today. Until next time, may the conversation flow, the laughter linger, and the outlook remain optimistic but grounded in reality. This is Katya signing off.